Peter Gagg, who drives it through. Oh, that's a magnificent goal, a sensational goal by the Hullamore captain, Mitchell van der Gagg.
We had the high notes on the park. That's how we became a great team together, you know. It was just unfortunate we never won anything.
Lane's in trouble, there's Steve Kitch. The super sub has done it again. And Motherwell are back in front.
Without supporters, you cannot play a game. They are a very, very important part of the club.
Jukovic on the chase, might get there. Handel is with it. Jukovic! Oh, wow! Oh, wow! Lukas Jukovic!
I remember to this day, it was unbelievable, and that's another reason I love going back to Fir Park, because you do get to interact with the supporters again, who were wonderful for me.
Chance here for Motherwell. This is Pettigrew, outnumbered though, still has it. Chance of a lifetime for Pettigrew, and it is this!
Yeah, obviously being on the podcast is everything I've dreamed of.
Goes through the middle though, Marvin Johnson. Defenders backing off. To get a deflection!
Hello and welcome to the MFC podcast. Tonight, myself, Jane Buster, delighted to welcome along Neil Logan. Neil, thank you for agreeing to come on, mate.
No worries at all. Good to be here.
Well, I think we can finally say that the season is finished, and it came as a bit of a relief to us all. We finished with a defeat, a 3-2 loss to Inverness, in which was a pretty turgid affair, end of season type game, it must be said. Jay, I know you weren't there on Saturday, but we'll look back in this season over the course of this episode. It's been pretty disappointing at times, but I suppose the key factor is we finished the season in ninth and yet again a Scottish Premiership side.
Yeah, I mean, that's obviously the key factor based on, you know, perhaps October, November onwards. It's certainly not where we would have hoped to be at the very start of the season. As you said, I didn't make it to either the Kilmarnock or Inverness games. I was on holiday, but you know, from what I have read and heard about the Inverness game, it was pretty dire stuff, although I did notice a few plaudits for the number of Motherwell fans that made it up there, so that was obviously good. Season as a whole, yeah, it's just been a pretty dire affair all in. I was thinking about positives earlier on, you know, those moments in a season that you kind of reflect back on as being your highlights. And I think having not been at the Kilmarnock game, I'd imagine that would have been, you know, the relief in that game would have perhaps been up there. But other than that, you're looking at perhaps wins at Inverness and Ross County away from home and a last minute equaliser at New Douglas Park. And I think when you're looking at, you know, Louis Malt scoring an injury time, you know, not even a winner, an equaliser against Accies as your kind of highlight of the season. I think that kind of sums everything up.
Buster, on Saturday, it was a game that Inverness had to win. Of course, they did that, but still found themselves relegated at the end of the 90 minutes. It was obvious they were, given they had so much to play for, were going to be more up for it than our guys were. But at the same time, it's disappointing to see the performance levels dip. I personally don't think they really increased greatly over the course of the Accies game and the Kilmarnock game. But we had a wee bit of momentum for the first time this season, going into the game in the back of two consecutive wins, and we just didn't really kick on again. I know the injuries and a few changes were a factor as well, but a disappointing performance.
It was, yeah. As you said, it was actually just a completely rubbish game. The first half, Inverness didn't even look like a team that needed to win, to be honest with you. The weather was atrocious as well. Everything about it was rubbish, to be honest with you. And then, as you said, there was a mad 5-minute spell where Inverness just seemed to score at will. But, you know, if Jay's trying to pick up positives in the season, the only positive I can pick up for Saturday was, you know, James McFadden possibly signed off with a goal with his first touch again. But as you say, it was an awful game. Performance levels were pretty poor. And as I say, I don't know what happened in that 5 minutes, to be fair. We just seemed to let them score at will.
Neil, that's kind of been the story of the season, hasn't it? Just defensive errors. We seem to switch off at important times, and it's proven to be very costly. Inverness, by no stretch of the imagination, are a better team than we are, but for 5 minutes, they looked invincible against us. We just lost one goal, the heads went down, and before you knew it, you were 3-0 down. I know it's an end-of-season game, but losing 3 goals in 4 minutes is unacceptable, regardless of who you're playing.
Aye, I think, you know, if you could point to the Inverness game and say that somehow it was an anomaly, it was a one-off, then I think you would be justified in saying, well, it was end of season, we were safe, the goal was achieved, and perhaps there's some players who are thinking about their summer holidays. The reality, though, is that this is a team, I would argue, probably for the last 2 seasons, maybe even a wee bit further than that, that frankly it just gets slacked too easy. The amount of games where I've seen them just knock off, it has been unbelievable. And again, I wasn't at the Inverness game, but I wasn't surprised to see that, you know, there was a period in that game where they frankly were just on the beach, because it happens a lot. And as you say, Andy, it's happened a lot. It's been defensive mishaps where teams suddenly look fantastic against us, and they score at will.
Yeah, Jay, I think that's a very good point. Another real talking point from the game was Stephen Robinson's post-match interview, where he mentioned, well, he didn't mention Ryan Bowman by name, but pointed to the second goal and the celebrations after it. Basically, Bowman took the penalty in the 91st minute. There was only 2 minutes injury time added on. He didn't actually celebrate his goal as much as James McFadden celebrated, making it 3-1, it must be said. But Robinson certainly not very impressed by Bowman. And then you carry that on into today's tabloid newspaper reports that Bowman and Blyth will be amongst those leaving the club during the summer. Both Bowman and Blyth also have a year left of their deals, so clearly Robinson not very impressed by the attitude of some players in the dressing room.
Well, it's a difficult one. I mean, I've not actually heard Robinson's comments yet. Obviously, read some of the stuff that you guys were talking about earlier regarding them, so I was aware about the comments about Bowman celebrating, and I did manage to catch the highlights of the Inverness game earlier today, and it didn't really seem like the most celebrated goal of all time, and you're completely right. I think McFadden, you know, celebrated a wee bit more. It's one of those things. I mean, I don't read too much. I certainly don't make any great link between that and Robinson's post-match comments and the news in the Sun today that Bowman's going to be going. I don't think that is a deal clincher by any means. I suppose in one way, it's at least you want your manager and your club to have certain standards, and if losing 3-2 is nothing to celebrate about at Inverness, particularly in the manner that we seem to have done so, then by all means I agree with Robinson on that. I certainly wouldn't link the two, though. I thought it was interesting. We obviously know, I'm no doubt we'll speak about a good number of the players that we know are leaving. You know, it's interesting that obviously Bowman and Blyth have been mentioned by Andy Devlin in the Sun as being amongst those set to be moved on. They are, of course, the two that haven't been named on the official website, presumably because they are under contract. So, you know, it's not something the club are going to really confirm or deny at this stage. Blyth certainly isn't a surprise. I think, you know, everybody that's seen him, you know, all fairness to the lad, you know, he might come good at some level, but he's looked completely out of place. And everybody we seem to have spoken to who, you know, have perhaps played with him or know him from his younger years, you know, seem to agree that they're quite surprised that he's reached the level he has. So that's certainly not a surprise if he goes. But Bowman, I think there was the potential, or there is the potential, for an SPL-level striker in there. I think that McGee perhaps didn't use him particularly well. He was brought in, he was quite rightfully behind McDonald and Moult all season, and when he was brought on, he was thrown up as a target man, which is clearly not his role. But when you throw him up as a target man and he's not winning headers, fans get on the back, they begin to think that he's rubbish, etc, etc. When he was actually played at a more, you know, I don't want to say playmaker role, but in a more attacking role where it was ball to feet, and you know, he was deceptively quick, decent on the ball, and I thought that there could have been a player there. So if he does, if Andy Devlin's incorrect and he does end up staying next year, perhaps not the replacement for Morton McDonald we're looking for, but I certainly wouldn't be too displeased with that. But it'll be interesting to see, because we obviously know the list of the players that are definitely being released, and we know the players that we're in talks with to keep based on the official website. It'll just be down to a matter of time to see whether Andy Devlin's right on his Blyth and Bowman shoot.
I'll go on and talk about that list in just a wee minute, but Neil, Bowman and Blyth, two examples of players that we've got from down south, not kind of knowing too much about them. Our scouting process and our recruitment is becoming a bit of an issue for me. I'm not sure that we're really, it's almost a hit or a miss type approach, and we're missing many more than we're actually getting right. The exceptions are clearly Marvin Johnson and Louis Moult in recent times, but there's been a lot of players that they just haven't managed to step up to the mark.
Aye, I think that's a fair criticism, actually. I mean, I think interesting, you know, that they chat about Bowman. You know, I'll be totally honest, I just think he's hopeless. I just think he's anywhere near good enough. And I think that, you know, it's kind of funny that one of the names on the list, I realise we'll go on this later on, but one of the names on the list that I was really disappointed to see go was wee Craig Moore. Now maybe that's because he's come through the youth team, and you're always more forgiving of players that kind of come through that path. So I never quite think you take off your claret and amber glasses when you rate these sorts of players. But there was a guy who, whenever I've seen him, like, granted I don't go to the reserves anymore, but whenever I'd seen him play, I thought, right, that's a striker. You know, we've always done well historically with kind of small, mobile, hard to play against strikers, whether it was Arnott, McGrillan, even wee Skippy the first time round. You know, these sorts of players have traditionally done well for us at Motherwell. And so I looked at him and thought, right, okay, out that ilk, fine. And then he gets loaned out, scores a lot of goals for Ayr, albeit in a much lower league. And then when I saw he was released, I went and did a wee bit of digging about, and Ian McCall, I think last year when Moore had got an injury, a head knock, unsurprisingly seems to be our luck, but he'd got a bad head knock, and McCall was genuinely disappointed calling him their number one striker and all the rest of it. And I just feel, I look at guys like Bowman and I think, really, you're better than Craig Moore? You know, I just don't see it. And certainly Jacob Blyth, I just don't see what we saw in him. So I think those two, I just don't think are good enough. I think they need to go. And I think, to be honest, that does open serious questions. The player who I think opens even more questions up is Big Zach. Now, I worry about players of his type, and by his type I mean players who are down at reasonable sized clubs. I mean, Reading, all being well, when they're in the playoff final, aren't they? So that's a boy that could be playing for a Premiership club at least, but we've brought him up here. He's an under 21 internationalist, and I don't know if he ever kicked a first team ball before he came up. And you look at it and you think, we've brought a guy up, nae first team experience, straight in the team, clearly thinks he's a ball player, and frankly, maybe in the under-21s in England, he is, but I just don't know what we based our signing of that guy on. When we were light for cover at centre-half, and we knew we were, we brought this boy up, and it looks to me as if we signed him on reputation. Maybe I'm being harsh, but at best you could say they signed him on the back of reserve team performances at Reading. And to me, I've got severe doubts that that's good enough, a good enough way of doing it. Other boys, I mean, I think you're right to highlight positives in Johnson and Moult. I think both of those have been outstanding players. I thought the guy, Fletcher, was really unlucky. I liked him when I saw him. Understands why we let him go, but I thought he was a good player. Freer, I think, yeah, can beat his man, get to the byline, aye, okay. But beyond that, I mean, no, really, some really poor, poor, poor signings.
Well, see, to be fair, you've compared two completely different types of signings here. As you said yourself, Zach Jones was, you know, brought in as cover. Zach Jones, sorry, was brought in as cover for a championship team on a six month loan deal. Now, as you said, quite rightly, it didn't work out. But on those instances, you're taking a chance when you're picking up a guy who, as you said, I don't think he'd ever played first team football for Reading. Taking a chance on him there. He had to go straight into the first team. It wasn't that, you know, we were wanting to go straight into the first team. He came up here and McManus was done within one or two games. He went straight into the first team. And it didn't work out, fair enough. But whether or not, you know, they're signing lower league players for England, because, again, as I say, this guy's in the championship. That guy's playing in the reserves in the championship, the championship team. Whereas Moult, Johnson, Freer, whoever, you know, they're coming for League Two, League level. They're the ones that we're taking chances on. Zach Jules was just brought in to, you know, to fill a gap, basically. These other guys are the guys that we're taking the chances on. We're trying to, you know, pick up a wee bit of potential and move them on. Now, whether they're being signed for, I don't know, Wrexham or Man United or whoever else, you know, just for these odds, it's everybody knows the transfers sometimes just don't work. We could sign somebody who was balls at Ross County this season, you know, and it could work out great for us. It's how you fit in,
how you play
the manager, how it goes. It's, you know, transfers might not work.
I think your point about Big Jules being a different type of signing, that's totally fair. That's a totally fair thing to say in terms of, look, stopgap, injuries got worse, although frankly I would argue that, you know, the chances when he was signed, it wasn't a great position, so the chances of him playing were big. And you're right, with that sort of player, the reason why you take him on loan rather than sign him is because it is a bigger risk. So I think that's fair enough. I agree with you there. The reality is, as you say, every signing's, you're taking a gamble, aren't you? But I think, you know, our strike rate right now does raise some pretty serious questions. I say, for Big Jules, it just hasn't worked. What I was going to go with Big Jules is, I do worry about him as a player. He strikes me as a guy that really needs to be playing first team football now. If he spends another year at Reading, that's a young guy that he just fears just going to vanish.
Yeah, maybe quite rare. So that's to be fair, that's their worry. He's not our player anymore, but maybe quite rare. So because he looked absolutely bogging.
I do get the whole thing about the signing non-league players from England. That's what I think we've said before in the podcast. My concern is that we are, you know, pretty heavy on that. You know, I completely more than happy for us to use it as a market and to, you know, keep an eye on it and to maybe even, you know, set ourselves, you know, 20-30% of signings perhaps to be from that market with the intention of selling for profit. My worry is that we're focusing too much on that. But that said, when you factor in guys, you know, like Joe Chalmers, like Craig Sampson, I mean, there's an argument here that it's just our entire recruitment policy for the last couple of years has been, you know, far below average. I mean, yes, that because we've been signing a number of players from the English, either the lower leagues or, you know, guys on loan, you know, the likes of Jake Taylor, the likes of Zach Jules, then, you know, it does become pretty diluted with, you know, all these players from down south. But I think when you even include some of the signings we've made that don't fit that mould, I think it kind of just, you know, suggests that our recruitment for the last couple of years has just been incredibly poor in all areas, regardless of whether they're from Wrexham or, you know, Kidderminster or from, you know, Falkirk or a free agent, you know, recently at Kilmarnock. I think it's that's been the issue. You know, for every Freer, you know, there's been a Lucas, for every Johnson, there's been a Blythe, and that's the big issue we've got because, you know, similarly, you know, you're signing dross like Joe Chalmers and Craig Sampson at the same time.
See, my issue is the fact that we clearly knew that Jules was raw at best. He wasn't a player that was coming with any experience of first team football at any level. So for Mark McGee to go and bring him in on loan, knowing that McManus was struggling with a knee injury, by all accounts McManus had been struggling since very early on in the season, so he knew that there was every possibility that Zach Jules was going to need to come in and there would be an onus on him to perform. That just seems really reckless, particularly when you're actually looking at the January transfer window and Stephen Pearson arrived, Lee Lucas got an extension to his contract to the end of the season. Why were we focusing on absolutely hammering the central midfield area with players and not actually looking at bringing in a centre-half that at least a wee bit of pedigree and a wee bit of experience to play in that position? Because ever since McManus has went out of the team, and for all he's got his doubters, we've badly, badly missed him, and we've suffered many, many times as a consequence.
No, I think as mentioned earlier, I think the Zach Jules thing, I think there must be a heavy dose of reputation in there for him to have been signed. It must be because he's playing at Reading and Scotland under-21s, and probably his physique plays a part as well. You know, it's probably if we were at perhaps panic stations and you know, really looking about for a centre-half, if you're offered, you know, the chance to a six-month loan deal for a player who is playing for the Reading under-21s, who is playing for the Scotland under-21s and who has built like a brick shit house, you're probably going to look at him and say at the very least he is going to be able to be, you know, a solid defender who can just stick his head in things and get the ball out of the box. And, you know, perhaps at that stage that's what we're looking for. Now, as it turns out, he wasn't particularly good. As it turns out, as was mentioned earlier, again, he that wasn't the type of player he seems to be. He seems to think he's far better on the ball than he really is. And I think, you know, the rumours were that Robinson kind of rated him quite highly and was keen in signing him long term. I think we would all be agreed that we're not particularly keen on that idea. But I think reputation has perhaps came into some of these signings, and I would say the same for Jacob Blythe. You know, I can't see how anybody, and again, you know, we don't want to be slating the lad, but I don't know how anybody can kind of watch Jacob Blythe play and think he is, you know, good enough to play for Motherwell. And again, you know, you look at it, he came through the youth ranks at the newly crowned English Premiership champions. You know, how much of that does that cloud, you know, someone's judgment when making that call? I suppose, you know, as we said earlier, looking for positives, the positives are at least in terms of some of the guys we're mentioning, like Samson, like Chalmers, like Jules, you know, we should hopefully not see them again at Firth Park.
Is it unfair for me to suggest that laziness comes into this as well? Jules was at Reading, one of Mark McGee's old clubs. Blythe at Leicester, one of Mark McGee's old clubs. Is it one of these things where almost the contacts are there and perhaps old coaches are there and he's taking an easy way out?
I don't think you can call that laziness, to be honest with you. That's, you know, keeping in touch and using any connections. You know, fair dues, as I say, these two guys didn't work out, but, you know, if he'd used his connections and brought us in, you know, two players who've done really well for us, you know, would you suggest it was laziness then? You know, that's just how it works, unfortunately. Probably he's still got a good relationship with his clubs, maybe, and that's where it's came from. It could be, you know, it's just been completely random and that's how it's happened, but I suspect it's to do with the fact he's probably still got decent relationship with some of the people behind the scenes or even still in the coaching staff, and that's where these players have come from.
See, on that point, many moons ago, I spoke to one of the senior figures at the club about Stuart McCall's appointment. So I'll no name names, but what the person said to me was one of the key reasons that McCall had been given the job was because of his contacts down south. And they felt that that was a way that they could more easily get players. I don't think it's laziness. I think that is having an extended network of contacts that can maybe tip you the wink about players or, you know, identify players on your behalf that are playing at other clubs, and maybe it's an easier conversation about a loan deal when the club knows you as the manager and trusts you. I think that's a good thing. The trouble is when it's a poor signing, it kind of opens you up to kind of to criticism for it. The thing is with Big Jules, and then, yeah, maybe we should stop castigating the boy too much.
It's becoming a Zach Jules special.
As a wee bit, I suspect Big Zach gets signed because he was an under-21, and I suspect Mark knew him firsthand for the under-21s at Scotland. And so, yeah, as we've all said, on paper, then Jesus, on anything but grass, you could see why you'd sign him. You know, he certainly looks the part. Unfortunately, on the green stuff at Fir Park, he didn't look great, so it was a shame. But I hope, and I genuinely say this, I hope the boy gets first-team fit, but gets some hard games under his belt, because he seems to have all the right attributes. I just hope he gets to progress and really drive on, because I'd love nothing better than to see Big Zach strolling out for Reading in the Premiership and doing a good job. That'd be a great thing, but he really needs to get his act together, or his career's going to pass him by, I fear.
I'd love to see him sign for Dundee and Gifter's 3 goals next year, but fair enough.
I would say I'd be happy to see him learn, just as long as it's not with us. The other kind of thing is as well, it's quite interesting for us to talk about Mark McGee leaving a club and having good relations as well. That must be quite a novelty. But we'll move on and we'll go through this list in a wee bit more detail. Firstly, the players that the club are negotiations with a view to extending their deals: Lionel Ainsworth, Russell Griffiths and Keith Lasley. Buster, we've talked about Lasley in quite a lot of depth in the last podcast. We don't know what kind of terms he's been offered or what sort of role. There's also James McFadden's notably absent and on the list as well, given that his contract's up. So a wee bit of limbo there. So we'll talk about Ainsworth first and foremost. Easily the most frustrating player that I think I've ever seen in my lifetime at supporting Motherwell again on Saturday. Kind of almost back to typecast Lionel Ainsworth, where he really struggled to make a mark in the game. Didn't look that up for it. He had done his job in the Tuesday, and it was back to just relaxing for 90 minutes when he gets a chance. He was hooked fairly early on as well. This was, if the chat is to believe, is correct, then Lionel Ainsworth is very much one of the highest earners at Fir Park. You couldn't see him being offered the same terms to remain, given the club have seemed quite keen to move him on, possibly in the last two or three transfer windows.
I think so. It really is one that sort of tugs at your heartstrings if you really think about it, because the last 2 or 3, 4 years, well, his first 2 seasons he was fantastic, you know, everybody said that. Even then he had spells in there where he was rotten, but the last 2 years he's been rotten, but he's been involved in, you know, the big important games, the playoff season 2 years ago, he scored the goal to put us 2-1 up the other night as well in Kilmarnock. If it was up to me, I don't think I'd offered him a contract. As you say, we don't know what sort of terms are in any of these guys have been offered. So it wouldn't surprise me, as you know, our mate Marty says this morning, if we've, you know, halved his wages and things like that, and says there it is, take it or leave it. And it wouldn't surprise me if he's, you know, he was looking elsewhere.
Jay, you will have missed one of Lionel Ainsworth's very few performances this season, the Kelly game. It's a hard one to assess, isn't it? Because on his day, he's absolutely unplayable. It just doesn't have enough of those days for me, though.
Yeah, I mean, with Lionel Ainsworth, you get the usual sort of cliches trotted out about, you know, well, he's a winger and wingers are inconsistent. There's also the very true fact that if he played to his, you know, highest level week in, week out, he would have left Motherwell years ago and we would have got a decent fee for him. For me, I tend to agree with Buster, and that there's a player there. He has contributed some fantastic moments for Motherwell, and he is capable of really turning a game. And in fact, on his day, he's one of our best players. And so, you know, when you consider that, I can understand the club offering him a new deal. If he is one of the highest earners, then he has not earned, you know, that deal to be renewed. I would like to think that we aren't in the business, though, of simply getting rid of someone who has the potential to change a game and has the potential of scoring the goals he does. But it has to be relative. You know, we can't, we're not in a position to be throwing money at someone who is going to just pop up with those moments, you know, six, seven times a season if we're lucky. So I would assume that it's on reduced terms. Whether Lionel chooses to accept that or not, you know, remains to be seen. I tend to agree with Busta, as he said, what Marty said earlier. I think that I wouldn't be surprised if the club offers him something vastly reduced and he knocks it back to move on, which is, of course, entirely up to him, and all the best to him. It's an unfortunate situation because he is the kind of player that, in recent times, has you know, popped up with some incredible goals and some of the, you know, the best moments. You know, his goals in either legs of the playoffs against Rangers in particular, of course, the third goal at Ibrox. You know, so it's always difficult to see a player like that go. And it's also frustrating because you know how good he can be. But I remember, you know, doing a podcast a couple of years ago, perhaps maybe 2 years, when we were at Dens Park. And it was that old cliche. I think myself and Matt had been at the game, and we came back with a terrible, terrible cliche about how we would have ran him, you know, driven him down, back down south ourselves. You know, it's a terrible part, but it was true because he was just the most disinterested player on the planet. And I think because he's given us those moments, it's easy to forget that. It's easy to forget just how almost pointless a player he can be, particularly if you're throwing money at him. So I'm more than content with the club offering them a deal, if it's on reduced terms. Whether or not he accepts remains to be seen. You just have to kind of, you know, the idea that wingers can be inconsistent is fair enough. Freer can have, you know, quiet spells in games, or quiet games, but he still has spells where he's, you know, contributing. And I would say that Freer has contributed more in the last 6 months. Perhaps nothing, you know, incredibly flashy. He hasn't popped up with, you know, worldies or anything like that. But what he has contributed, I would argue, has been far more consistent and far more worthwhile in the, you know, 4 or 5 months he's been here than Lionel Ainsworth potentially has in 2 years. And I think that says it all.
For all the, we talk about the good performances and tugging the heartstrings, the other kind of emotion that comes to mind is anger for me, Neil, because he, performances like the one on Tuesday night against Kilmarnock show you how good he can be when he's on song. It was a delight to watch, and you just think, we've just got that so few times from you, and possibly we'd be in a much healthier position if Lionel Ainsworth did turn it on more often, not even every week, but just more often than 3-4 times a season.
Aye, I mean, I think he's one of my, you know, I've got the fortune, misfortune of sitting beside my own father every week, and he's one of my dad's most hated players, simply for that reason. My dad likes players not on ability, but in effort. If he thinks that you're given the most of which you're capable, my dad's happy. So as a result, John Philbin, a fairly limited player in his time, struggled to get in the team when, frankly, you know, you'd like to see Buff Martin in the team. You know, he just raved about Philbin and still raves about Philbin, not because he was a particularly great player, but because he gave you all he got. On that basis, Ainsworth, they just can't abide him because he clearly has more than he shows. The thing that really surprised me about Ainsworth, though, right? Because it's funny, because they were talking to him, I was livid, because I thought, why do you give contracts or even talk to players to give them a contract who you would not consider to be a regular in the first team? If they're not a regular, you know, this Ainsworth's 29. If he's not able at that stage in his career to be in the team every week, then you've clearly got doubts about him. And if you've got doubts about him, then I don't think you should be giving him a contract. You should be trying to sign a player who you think, well, at least to give a chance to get in the team. But the thing that amazed me was he has played 107 games for us in 4 years. I couldn't believe that. And I'm assuming, I don't know what the split is in substitute appearances, but it must be a fair old amount. But even so, you know, I was saying, oh, this guy, you know, he plays, you know, maybe 1 in 4 of the games, I thought. But actually, he's played 35 games this year. And then I thought, oh, well, I could probably see that 35 games, yeah, maybe he is due a first-team contract. But actually, thinking back on it, you know, over the course of the, since the bottom six split, is Lionel Ainsworth a boy that we looked to as fans and said, yeah, we can count on Lionel, he'll give us the best he's got, and really put in a shift to get us out of this? And the reality is, no, you couldn't. You just couldn't. And I take what everybody's saying about that there's games where Lionel can turn it on and he scored some fantastic goals and great free kicks and all those things, but the reality is he doesn't do it often enough, and at 29 we should just be moving him on. Thanks very much, Lionel, but no thanks.
Yeah, it'll certainly be an interesting one, Buster, given you'll have seen him now three times or four times. Russell Griffiths hasn't managed a... Oh, sorry, he has. He managed one clean sheet against Hamilton. Has been fairly steady without being spectacular. I don't think he talks enough or is imposing enough a figure to really stake much of a claim for being a first-choice goalkeeper in what I've seen so far. But, again, we look at goalkeepers that we've brought in loan, and the majority of them over the years have worked out pretty well. Developed a good relationship with Everton as a result of that. Is this something you would like to see us pursue, or do you think that basically we've maybe been a bit clouded by the fact that we've had Craig Sampson in goal for most of the season, that Russell Griffiths is perhaps some sort of messiah figure for that reason?
But that's exactly the point I was going to make. Actually, I was going to say he seems to have become a wee bit of a cult hero now because he's, you know, displaced Sampson. I'll be honest with you, you say he's not done anything spectacular, but he made one good save. He made a really good save against Hamilton, actually, and it was nothing each. The wee Brazilian guy, or whatever nationality was, that the call guy, made a great save for him for about, you know, 10, 12 yards. He's also flapped about four or five crosses in these games, I know. I've nothing against the boy, but I don't know if he's good enough to come in as a first-team goalkeeper. So it all depends, again, on what sort of role they're offering, or what sort of contracts they're offering the three guys have offered contracts to, at least the first-team guys. You know, if he's happy to come and sit and learn from somebody who will bring in a bit more experience, fair enough. If he's in to be your first-team goalkeeper, first-choice goalkeeper next season, I'm not sure if that's the right move. As I say, he's not technically done anything terrible yet, but I'm just not sure he's a number one goalkeeper. I'd like to see us, you know, go for somebody with a bit more experience. You could say that's what we've done with Sampson, I suppose, but, you know, maybe somebody who's a bit more reliable than Sampson, but you know, maybe about the same age, 30, 32, whatever age Sampson was. You know, somebody like that I'd like to see bring in. Griffiths, as I say, he's done pretty well, to be fair. The clean sheet things, it's not only him. Fair dues, he's the last line of the defence, but, you know, there should be three, four guys in front of him, you know, just making sure the ball doesn't even have to come to him, first of all. But he's not done anything terribly bad, so I'm a bit on the fence about that as well, but I wouldn't like to think he's going to be our number one next year.
I don't see any reason to believe he is going to be honest. I don't see, you know, we've brought in a guy, a young goalkeeper, and keep in mind, you know, we all play football manager. We know it keeps popping up telling us that goalkeepers don't, you know, reach their peak until their 30s and stuff, you know. So in terms of development, you know, goalkeepers are, you know, a wee bit long term in terms of development than most players. At the end of the day, we've brought up a young goalkeeper from Everton to sit on our bench as our backup, and probably would have did so the entire season. And the only reason he's played is because Samson's, you know, ridiculous mistakes just got to the absolute breaking point. Now, Griffiths has came in, he's done reasonably well, as has been said, you know, nothing spectacular, but nothing criminal. Presumably, he's been improving and training, and you know, the goalkeeping coach that Robinson brought in has hopefully had good things to say about him. But I don't see anything from this season to suggest that he's been offered a deal as a first choice goalkeeper. I would be incredibly surprised if we don't already have targets for a first choice goalkeeper. It may be that Griffiths, you know, is told that, well, you've finished this season as number one, so you can start the League Cup, you know, in goals and see how it goes. But I see absolutely no reason to think that we're offering Griffiths a deal as a first-choice goalkeeper. I agree with Buster. I think we need to be looking for someone you know, solid and with experience, preferably at this level. I would say, I would extend that to the entire defence, to be honest. You know, we mentioned earlier about English lower league players. I would like to scrap that transfer policy when it comes to the defence and just look to get in guys who are going to put bodies in the line, you know, John Philibans, you know, a back four of John Philibans if need be, you know, guys who are going to make sure we're not conceding some of the ridiculous goals we've had this season, and combine them with a goalkeeper who has experience, who has hopefully played at this level, who isn't Craig Sampson, and move forward from there. But I don't see any reason to think, you know, to have alarm bells going that Griffiths is going to be brought in as a number one whatsoever.
So, see, just a quick question there then, right? So if you've got a boy on loan, right, why are we not looking at a reserve team as providing a goalkeeper rather than signing a boy on loan for Everton to sit on our bench? I just don't understand the logic of that.
I would agree with that. And in fact, it's a point I think I made a good few times when we first actually signed Griffiths. I mean, it seems to be particularly a Mark McGee thing. You know, you remember Mark McGee's first time around, he'd Gunnar Nielsen brought in on loan to sit in the bench. There was Arthur Kryziak to sit in the bench, brought in on loan. He had Luke Daniels brought in on loan to sit in the bench. It seems to be some sort of, you know, bizarre philosophy from Mark McGee that bringing in on loan goalkeepers to do nothing but sit on the bench is somehow more beneficial than allowing our own under-20s goalkeeper to sit on the bench. And that said, I don't see a lot of the under-20s these days, so I can't really comment on the goalkeepers at that level. But no, I do tend to agree with that. You know, I do see bringing in particularly, you know, on loan goalkeepers, you know, if it's about giving them the match day experience of being in the team bus and being around the first team squad, then, you know, I'd far rather we did it with our own younger players rather than the younger players of other clubs.
Well, yeah. just on that as well, is that maybe not a matter of, again, budget or something like that as well? Because even if you look at our under-20s this year, they had to bring a goalkeeper on loan because the only other goalkeeper that's contracted to ourselves broke his hand or his arm or something. There's a boy called Oliver Payne, yep, on loan for Sunderland or Southampton or something like that, because the boy Morrison broke his arm or something during, you know, somewhere around about the break time as well. So is it maybe a matter of, you know, budgets? We're paying a small percentage of whatever these guys' wages could be, and maybe, you know, whether it's McGee or whoever it is, maybe it's somebody just saying, if we can get away with paying 10% of this guy's wages rather than, you know, paying a full guy's wages, is it a matter of using that money elsewhere in the budget, rightly or wrongly this season, depending on what you think of the other signings? But, you know, I'm just thinking, we only had two contracted goalkeepers and one of them ended up with a broken arm.
So see if that was the reason, then I could understand the logic of that. It would then pose a bigger question as to why is our youth system no producing goalkeepers at that under 20 level, but we'll come back to that another time. But if it's a purely financial reason, then I sort of get it. Where my head was going though was for purely financial reasons, given we should have a goalkeeper in the under 20s, to me there's almost a default option that says the first choice goalkeeper in the under 20s is your reserve team number two goalkeeper in the first team. And that's kind of the way I'd always thought it should be. But it just seems kind of odd that we... Because if you don't work like that, you end up with these goalkeepers who aren't playing games.
But that's how it works all over the world. I mean, even if you look at Dean Brill earlier this season when he was on number two or four, he left at Christmas as well. He was on number two and sat and done nothing. The year before, Craig Sampson was on number two and sat and done nothing. That's how it works. Unfortunately, you know, it'd be ideal if these but guys that come and sit on the bench, but you know, there's maybe times where they've got other duties on the match day. Again, I don't know nothing about the under-20s, to be fair, but maybe if they've got other things to do on the match day that involves it's part of their under-20s or whatever, I don't know. But that's just how it works, unfortunately. It'd be ideal, you know, in the budget way, again, if the Peter Morrison, I don't know what age Peter Morrison is, to be honest with you, but if he's 17 years old, and if, for example, Samson gets injured, we then have to rely on somebody like Peter Morrison, 17-year-old. That doesn't always work. All right, it's worked for AC Milan with their goalkeeper who's just turned 18, but it's not going to work for us.
So I don't know. I don't think anybody can say that, because I don't think any of us, except me from Rod, I don't think any of us have seen the boy but I take your point. It's a big risk at any young goalkeeper, especially that position. I don't, again, get back to the Griffiths thing. I look at it and I just think, what are we doing here? We're signing a player who I think we're all agreed is unlikely to be the number one, or at least we would all be pretty concerned about the season ahead if he was. I think we need to be signing a good goalkeeper. I think it's funny, earlier on we were talking about how missed Big McManus has been. The reality is we were still the worst defence in the league with Big McManus playing. And I'm not blaming McManus for that all the defence carries their weight. But actually, this year, Samson, and I know he's none of our favourites, having a poor goalkeeper has cost us badly. Really, really badly. And FITBA is a team, not about the strongest player in a team, but about the weakest player. And if your weakest player is your goalkeeper, you've got big, big problems. So next year, we really need to get Hoddy a good goalkeeper. Because I think the centre-halves, the full-backs, even the centre-midfielders when they're defending, the difference between a good goalkeeper and a bad goalkeeper is transformational with the whole team, just in terms of their confidence, in terms of everything about them. Players look better players when the goalkeeper behind them instills a bit of confidence in them. But this year with Samson, and indeed for the last couple of years with Samson, he's just not done that, the guy.
Yeah, I can agree more with that. The other interesting thing is, it appeared that Robinson was very keen in bringing Alan Manus, Johnston goalkeeper, to the club. A kind of guy like Jakes was kind of looking for a 32-year-old goalkeeper with a bit of experience at this level. But he's chosen to sign on with St Johnston, so he'll remain there. I wonder if maybe the decision to bring Griffiths in was maybe made on the back of Manus choosing to stay at St Johnston rather than joining Motherwell. I don't know. It's just,
I mean, Manus strikes me. I mean, I think Manus is a good goalkeeper. He's getting, even in goalkeeping terms, I mean, Manus is 35, so he's going to push on a bit, but I think there must be goalkeepers out there. It goes back to the scouting. I mean, before Manus turned up at St Johnston, he was at Shamrock Rovers. Now, before that, he was at Linfield. Now, this is a guy who pretty much his whole career has been a first-choice goalkeeper. You know, wherever he's been the man. I'd like to see us sign a player of that kind of ilk that's maybe mid to late 20s, maybe a wee bit older, but who's been a first-team goalkeeper and is, you know, and is holding it down for a period of time. That would make me feel a bit better about him, unless I'd seen him or not. But I think that sort of player we really need. And yeah, we've been spoiled over the years with good goalkeepers, but I think we really need to make sure that to me is the critical signing beyond all others.
No, I agree with that. I was actually thinking about that earlier on, just with the goalkeeping situation, particularly with Griffiths being offered the deal. And I think we've kind of scrimped and saved a wee bit recently on goalkeepers. And, you know, it's just like what you were saying there. I think that the difference that having a good quality goalkeeper can make is unbelievable. And it can be the difference between, you know, another season like we've had this season and you know, being able to actually propel ourselves away from that relegation zone next year. At the end of the day, you know, you look back, yes, I mean, George Long, you know, he probably left, but, you know, same with Conor Ripley, actually. I think both Ripley and Long probably left with, you know, people with a bit of a higher perception of their abilities than what they really showed over the piece while they were here. You know, Nielsen and Hollis, you know, the less said about them, the better. Samson was poor. Twardzig, you know, had a good wee spell, but was largely, you know, far too small for a start. Awful. You know,
I could hear you getting angry in the background there, Buster.
But you're talking about goalkeeper after goalkeeper who, you know, are just, they almost look like the cheap options. And you look at the same time, you know, Aki's had Michael McGovern, and now have Thomas Cherney, who's been great for.
You know, Jamie McDonald, who I'm a big, big fan of, you know, up until he signed for Kilmarnock, was playing at Falkirk. You know, there are teams around us who have the ability. You know, Alan Manis at St Johnstone, who, as far as I'm aware, isn't even getting a game. You know, all the teams around us, it's not as though there are these, you know, really rare SPL level, you know, experienced, decent, solid goalkeepers. You know, they're a rarity. I mean, there are a good few about, and for some reason, whether it's because, you know, we're not actually pursuing them, or we're just, you know, again, going back to recruitment, pursuing the wrong targets, I'm not sure. But that for me, the defence and the goalkeeper are absolutely vital next year. It's unfashionable. We all want to see, you know, who's going to replace Louis Moult. We all want to, you know, see the attacking players, you know, how many assists, how many goals, all that kind of thing. But until you get the defence and the goalkeeper right, if you're going into next season with Griffiths, you know, and as much as, you know, as was mentioned earlier, you know, McManus is important for us. Tate has been half decent. Hennigan blows hot or cold. Hamill's been a great servant to the club. But if that's your back four with Griffiths behind them, then I don't have any great confidence that we're going to concede any less goals next year than we did this year.
I totally agree with that.
Yeah, at the end of the day, maybe looking for a goalkeeper that matches that kind of, you know, that mould, that, you know, a Manis, a Cherney, whoever it is. And, it, you know, there are example after example of clubs around us bringing in goalkeepers like that. And for some reason, we just seem completely unable to do it. So again, it goes back to another reason why I think Griffiths will almost certainly be the second choice, because I think it would be pretty ridiculous if we weren't, you know, already identifying goalkeeping targets, because it's such an important signing. And you just have to look at, I remember going to Rugby Park in the first game of the last season, last season it is now, and the Kelly fans that we're all mates with telling us, you know, I can't believe you've signed Craig Sampson, he will cost you so many points this season. And lo and behold, that's exactly how it played out. So it wasn't as though it was a big shock to us. I mean, you know, everybody kind of knew how it was going to transpire, and yet for some reason we seem, I don't want to go back to the idea of laziness, but I don't get it. I don't understand why we seem incapable of going for those kind of players. I mean, if it was up to me, you know, I can't see it, but if it was up to me, we would have, you know, bust the bank, but we would have, if you're talking about Lionel Ainsworth being the highest paid player, I would have gave Lionel Ainsworth's wages to Jamie McDonald and brought him in when he was still at Falkirk. I think that, you know, that's the kind of player we should be looking for. And if you can't get someone like that, then by all means, you know, start to drop your standards a little bit. But it just never seems like we're ever interested in anybody like that. You look back, even the likes of Ruddy and Randolph, you know, as great as they were and as fantastic, you know, as it was to have them in the team, they were loan signings that, yes, would have been highly rated and you would have been hoping they would turn out the way they would, but they might not have, because it wasn't the experienced, solid goalkeeper. Now, of course, it worked wonders there. It hasn't since, and I think that's a position we really need to get sorted, because you will see a transformation, you know, as was mentioned earlier, throughout the team, but particularly in the back four or three or however we play it, if you've got a commanding, experienced and vocal goalkeeper in there.
I don't disagree with you there, but and obviously, you know, that's what I like to see as well, but can you tell me somebody or anybody of anywhere near these calibres who's available this summer, or do you know?
I've not looked. I couldn't tell you. You know, if who's out of contract at any club. I would like to think though that the scouting staff would hopefully be able to.
So there's a name that did. It's funny because I saw him on BBC Alba, and they were showing some of the playoffs games. I thought, God, is what has happened to his career? And it was Buzz. Remember Graham Smith, him of the squeaky voice, that played, and I was amazed, played 127 games with us before he was 25. Went down to Brighton, and he's bummed about ever since. And he's ended up at Brechin, and he's out of contract. Now, I'm not saying we should sign him, but I thought Buzz was all right.
He was 10 years ago, he did struggle a bit, but the reason
I'm highlighting him, I suppose, is there's a player who, you know, certainly experienced, rotten, fine, okay, we can take that on board, but I think there will be players in the first division, second division, who I suspect could do as a job, but we need to be going looking for these players. I mean, I remember, again, this might be a wee bit before all your guys' time, but after we won the Cup 91 and the club had fell out with Ali Maxwell and all that horrible thing that we used to do where we effectively held players to ransom and forced them out the game, we signed Billy Thompson, who had been through the same thing with Jim McLean at Tannadice. Billy Thompson was a cracking goalkeeper for us, brilliant goalkeeper. But it was a guy who had been a number one, had kind of fallen a bit doing the pecking order at Tannadice, was their reserve team keeper, came in and did a cracking job for us. I think we need to be looking about hard for keepers of that sort of ilk who can come in and do a job for us, because if we don't, then as we said already, then I think no matter who we sign up front, we're going to be looking at a similar season next year.
Just to finish off the guys that have been offered new deals, Barry Maguire, Dylan Faulkner, Shea Gordon, Peter Morrison and Adam Livingston, all of the under-20s, have been offered new deals as well. I actually saw something on Twitter earlier on that Shea Gordon posted in his Instagram yesterday and then took it down, that he signed a new deal with the club. So I think he maybe jumped the gun in that one. Maybe that was going to be a
oh dear,
a bit of good news later on in the week for the club. But well done, Shea. You've ruined that moment. So, but it's good to see guys that have been given a wee glimpse of the first team. Yeah, I think, again, most of them have looked draw that have been given an opportunity, but they'll have a chance to develop for a couple more years and hopefully play a part. The guys released: Craig Sampson, Joe Chalmers, Lee Lucas, Zach Jules' loans come to an end, Craig Moore, David Ferguson, Stephen Pearson and Scott McDonald. The under-20s players, Dylan Mack and Tom Fry and Jordan Pettigrew. Guys, we've went on a wee bit longer, so we'll not focus on each individual. The one that I would say would certainly be the biggest loss will be Scott McDonald leaving. He's come back to the club. Yes, he's had his tantrums. In fact, he has won for 90 minutes every Saturday, to be perfectly honest. But a huge player in the team, I think we've said before, a huge influence on Louis Moult. And another guy that's going to be very, very difficult to replace.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think any of us were in any doubt whatsoever he was going to sign on. That certainly wasn't, you know, on the cards, I don't think. I think, you know, the moment they kind of voiced his interest in leaving in January, I think it became completely obvious that he wasn't going to be a Motherwell player next year. And you're right, I think he's one of those players that I think, because Louis Moult does so much work, so much running, and is often the goal scorer, it can often be, you know, you can often take your eye off Skippy on a Saturday for long spells and not realise just how incredible he has been a player for Motherwell. Yes, he has the strops and the wee tantrums and the moping and moaning, but he's a fantastic player, and he will be massively missed. And, you know, as you said, unless, you know, the planets align and whoever decides to snap up Louis Moult, like, I think we all kind of expect Louis Moult to go at some point this summer. If they decide to, you know, sign Scott McDonald at the same time, unless that happens, then I think Louis Moult will massively miss Scott McDonald as well. That's not to, you know, be negative about Moult's ability. I think he's a fantastic player, fantastic goal scorer, and like all Motherwell fans, I absolutely love him. But I think he will need to, you know, really up his game and adapt his game, because I think, you know, McDonald plays such a massive, massive role in Moult's game, that I think, you know, it's probably been, someone mentioned during the week there, I think, the, you know, raised a sort of debating point about who would be the best strike force, McDonald or Moult or Higdon and Ojama. And to be honest, I would say McDonald and Moult. I think if you put McDonald and Moult in place of Higdon and Ojama in that Stuart McCall team, they would score goals for absolute fun. So it'll be really, really difficult to replace them. It'll be, you know, really sad to see them go. Acting as though Moult's already away, he might not be. But Scott McDonald, yeah, fantastic player, fantastic servant this time around. I know there was always, you know, that little bit of negativity when he first rejoined because of the whole Celtic situation. The same with Pearson, who's also leaving. But I think that we can accept that he's played a big, big part in keeping us basically in the top flight, and that's been invaluable.
Yeah, I've often said about Scott McDonald when he re-signed, basically, you know, he's a great player. He'll moan in the face off everybody. When he was first leaving, you know, whether it was Hearts, Hibs, Rangers, Dundee United, Celtic, whoever, he wanted to leave to go to everybody. You know, we were telling him no, and he was coming out and scoring goals at the weekend, then coming back into the papers during the week saying he'd love to sign for Dundee United, stuff like that. You know, he's been a great player for us, and as you quite rightly say, Jay, one thing I noticed about him when he came back was, you know, we plucked him at a football obscurity basically. He was you know, about to pack it in, head home, and he came to us, and he was our goal scorer. As he's went away, you know, he was a goal scorer with Celtic as well, but as he's went down south, he's probably learned a lot more about football, and he's came back up, and he's, you know, in the second spell with us, he was playing centre midfield at points as well, which wasn't maybe his best position, but when he was up top, he's coming, he's dropping in, looking for the ball, and he's looking, as you said, to play with his strike partner, whereas the first time up here, you know, he'd probably try and duck inside and hit a shot and hope that it deflected into the other corner and cost somebody the league. But he's been a great wee player, and it's going to be sad to see him go, but he's right up there. He's just a bit of a legend for me, to be honest with you.
See with Skippy, I think back in some of the games that have been most memorable in my lifetime, and that helicopter Sunday, two goals for McDonald, I'll never forget. A player that I don't know, maybe it's an age thing again. I don't consider to be one of the great players that we've had, but in terms of memorable moments, he's given us plenty. That said, I think for Skippy, it's the right time for him and us to say, you know what, Skippy, thanks a lot. You've been a great player. First time round, you know, we gave you a chance when, frankly, others weren't. You more than repaid us then. This time round, we were in a bit of a hole. You came up, you did us a job. You probably stayed on longer than you were expecting to. You've more than done your piece, thanks very much, but I think that's probably the right time to end it. The one that I suppose the other players that I look at and I think, yeah, that's enough, is Big Pearson. The second time when he left to go to India, I thought, aye, that's enough. Certainly this time, that is it. Not in the same class as McDonald as in terms of as a servant to us, but yeah, I don't think there's any of those players that I think we should say anything other than look, thanks very much, but yeah, time to move on.
Yeah, I think that kind of goes for all the guys moving on, and as we've, despite the fact for the last hour and 10 minutes, we've sat and lambasted everybody that's on their way out, particularly Zach Giles. But these guys have come in, and for one reason or another, with the majority of them, it's not worked out, but kind of wish them all the best, unless they visit for Park anytime soon and an opposing team, and in that case I hope they have an absolute nightmare. But yeah, some guys there being released that have clocked up a number of appearances for the club, some of them not really managing to make an impact, but that's the way football Lee goes, Lucas. I suppose.
Lee Lucas has to be one of the most pointless signings ever. He was absolutely boofing. He should never have been re-signed when he was trying to win another contract and he dived in at 2 feet at Aki's at New Year. Honest to God, man.
Are you not for a fortnight? Why are you in such a terrible mood?
See, to be fair, Lee Lucas's defence, right? See, if I was playing against Aki's, the likelihood of me putting a two-footed tackle in is pretty high. I don't think any of us should be criticising a Motherwell player for doing a 2 footed Nalaki's player.
My criticism is it wasn't Dougie Emery.
Oh God. I'd be throwing a chair at him.
Well, seeing the season's finished and yous are beating late to this, by the way, because he was absolutely woeful. I don't think he played after that.
Aye, I mean, I'm up at Ross County on the Tuesday night, he had a good game and contributed massively to get us the points, and other than that, I remember, you know, he did absolutely nothing. It was quite clear when we signed him at first that he was, you know, made the chocolate, and it just seemed to be a pointless signing. And as was mentioned earlier, you know, it came at a time when we seemed to be hoarding centre midfielders. So, you know, even if it was you know, a necessity signing like Jules or something like that, then you could perhaps have understood it. But it came at a time when we were, you know, overflowing with centre mids. You know, he was, his knees or whatever were made of balsa wood and he just was crap. So I tend to agree. I think it was a completely pointless signing. But again, you know, it's someone that, you know, as Barry said there, you know, even the likes of Samson and guys like that, you know, if they can go on and particularly Samson, if he can get another couple of years, you know, at a decent level, then all the power to him. And the same for Lucas. You know, Lucas is still young. He's come through at Swansea. He's obviously had some really, really big injury worries. And, you know, for his sake, I hope he can still carve out a career in professional football.
Yeah, I think he was given a last kind of opportunity to prove his fitness. I definitely don't think he would have been someone that cost us very much. It was, in fact, Alan Burrows said at the time that the risk was mainly on Lee Lucas rather than the risk on Motherwell, so it didn't work out, but I guess it was worth a shot. He did actually have a very good game against Ross County at Fir Park earlier on in the season, so he obviously saved his performances for Ross County. And then...
See that game, I thought he was brilliant that game. I remember it well, because I remember coming out and my dad and I were talking about, you know, that match and just being amazed at how well he'd played. And saying, you know, okay, he, as we've already said, he's clearly got knees made of balsa wood. But, you know, when he actually played in that game, I thought, you know what, this could be a real player. The reality is he was never consistent enough. He got injured an awful lot. And, yeah, shame for the boy, but just not done enough to kind of stay at the club. Again, as I say, I hope he does well, but, nah, just not enough.
Aye, that's fair. I'd actually forgotten about the home game against Ross County as well. So, aye, apart from, you know, two matches against Ross County and the two-footed challenge against Ackies, he didn't do any.
Oh, that was it.
that home game was 4-1, didn't we?
Yeah.
Aye, the full team got 10 out of 10 that day.
No, Samson got 2 out of 10. He conceded a goal as usual.
We did kind of describe the season in three words on Twitter yesterday. And about 17 of the replies were exactly the same. Glad it's over. So that was people's reaction to the season in three words. I think we'd all agree that it's been very disappointing. But that being said, is it fair to say we'll all be back next season for more trauma?
Definitely, aye. I'm bored of the pre-season or the post-stroke pre-season already, to be honest with you. So,
aye, that's it. I think one of the good things, you know, is I think we were talking earlier on, it has been a really, really woeful season, and it's enough to, you know, make you despair at times, particularly because it's on the back of a couple of seasons where we've just been really poor. Okay, we had, you know, the second half of the season before where we managed to get up at fifth, fantastic end to the season, but, you know, we haven't really set the heather alight. You know, since McCall left, we have been poor. But the one positive is exactly what we're talking about. There is a clear out happening. So for as poor as we were last season, there's going to be a new team. Now, can that team be worse than the one we saw this season? That remains to be seen. I would like to, you know, be a bit optimistic and hope that we can really push on and improve and hopefully improve the recruitment, you know, in its entirety. And hopefully build a squad that will have the right balance of these kind of buy-for-profit players from England, some experienced, you know, SPL-type players, and some of the younger players that Robinson seems, you know, keen to throw in, like Shea Gordon and guys like that. I think when you factor in the fact that you're going to have, you know, at least the basis of a team that perhaps has, you know, McManus, Tate, Cadden, you know, if Molt goes... You know, you're obviously going to have to replace up front, but then you've got Campbell, McHugh in the middle, Elliot Freer will be there. I think you have the basics of a half-decent side. So the fact that we are going to have a big transformation, I think something to be excited about and to be positive about. And like Buster, I'm already counting down the days to the start of the new season.
I'm going to be the slightly dissenting voice in all this, unfortunately. I agree that, you know, getting the clear out of the playing staff is great. I looked up today to see how the attendances have been going this year. And I'm not sure if these are official stats or not, but year on year, we've seen over a 10% drop in attendances. Now, when you consider that Rangers are in the league this year, that's a really worrying sign. So whilst the four of us will all be back. I do have a real big worry that our gates are on the wane, big style. Now, that's in a season when overall the leagues went up. Okay, Rangers have a big effect on that, but most teams have had an uptick this year in the amount of fans going through the gates. We've had a big downtick. I mean, I think I was looking and there's only two teams in the top two leagues who've had bigger drops in their average home gate than us. And one of them is Dundee United, because they're imploding. I'll be honest with you guys, I'm pretty worried that we seem to be on a bit of a wee downward spiral. Our home gates are poor now. I do despair about the kind of guys in positions of power at the club. I'm yet to be convinced with our manager, if I'm honest. I know that I need to give him maybe a bit more time. He's no time to pick his own players. I worry about next year. They need to sign a goalkeeper. If they get a good gene, or maybe be a wee bit more relaxed, it will be safe. I think we've got big problems, guys. I really do.
I must admit, I've never really been one for attendances. I find that, you know, attendances, particularly nowadays, you can make say what you want to say. I've not seen any great drastic decrease in the home crowd. Yes, maybe a couple hundred, many of whom, you know, probably didn't come because of Mark McGee, many of whom wouldn't have came because we weren't playing particularly well. That's what happens, you know, when we played Accies at home, the crowd was a bit bigger. You factor in the fact that away attendances now from most clubs are absolutely rotten. You know, I remember going to games when, you know, the likes of Hearts had, you know, or even Dundee United, Dundee, you know, teams like that had the good part of the South Stand. They're now barely bringing, you know, a couple of hundred. And then when you factor in, you know, Friday kickoffs, Tuesday kickoffs, Sunday lunchtime kickoffs, for me, attendances, you know, unless we're suddenly getting home attendances of you know, around the 3,000 mark, it's not something that really gives me alarm bells. If we start the season well next year and we're looking as though we're going to be pushing for top six, I think you'll see an increase. That's just the, you know, nowadays, particularly when you're in a, you know, an area like Lanarkshire that isn't the most prosperous, people are going to pick and choose their games. And it just so happens that when you're doing a wee bit better, a few more folk come through the gate. I think it's been a poor season and the attendances, you know, reflect that. But I certainly wouldn't have any concerns because, you know, it's not Saturday 3 o'clock and the away attendances aren't the same. So it's not something I would be looking too into. In terms of the manager, I've had big question marks, particularly over the back three. But at the end of the day, he was brought in to do a job. He's done it. It remains to be seen. He'll have a big job to do now, and we'll see how that goes. One point I made to Espada during the week there was, you know, because he's an unfashionable manager, I think it's easy to be negative about him. I think if we brought in someone like Simo Vallecari as the ex-manager, who, you know, I'm not slating, he was my pick for the job, Simo Vallecari wouldn't get the same reaction. Simo Vallecari, people would probably have said that we were terrible, but we needed to be terrible to grind out the results to keep us in the division, and Simo's done a good job. Because it's the unfashionable Stephen Robinson that's done it, it's a wee bit easier to be negative about it. Again, if Simo Vallecari had made, for example, the change against Kilmarnock where he brought in Ainsworth for Ferguson so early on and effectively changed the game, it would probably be heralded as the moment that the manager probably kept us in the division. I've not really seen anything about that because, you know, as I said, Stephen Robinson's quite an unfashionable manager. So for me, as I said, maybe it's just the eternal optimist. I don't have any concerns about attendances. Robinson might fail. As I said, he wasn't my pick for it, but I certainly wouldn't be reading too much into his performance so far.
See the point about the attendances as well. I actually was looking as you were talking there, and with Hearts visited on a Friday night and then a 12:30 kick-off on the Saturday. We had Aberdeen on a Friday night just before Christmas. Both Rangers and Celtic were early kick-offs on the Saturday, and obviously only had the one home game, whereas I think the powers that be kind of had budgeted for two games at home against at least one of Rangers and Celtic. We've talked about that plenty of times in the past, that we shouldn't have really been that naive to think that that's how it would work out, because Rangers were just promoted to the league. But obviously it has had an effect in terms of average crowds. But again, like you, I've not seen a drastic difference in the numbers.
Well, that is. The reason I highlight it is simply that I think the... the gates, the home gates in particular, are a good barometer of how people are feeling about the club. And I'm looking just now, and I'm thinking, yeah, okay, I can take it to a point about that. Has it been a massive drop off? I haven't really noticed it, but I do feel it's getting just every year or two now, it's just dropping away, and that worries me. And I think we should be worried. I think if we go another couple of years, put it this way, if our gates start to drop to kind of 3,500, then I think we should be concerned, because there's teams in the league below us who would have bigger gates, and at that point you say, actually guys, you're not going to be a team that is going to do anything more than struggle to stay in the Premier League. So that's the only reason I highlight it. I think we do need to keep an eye on it, because it is a good barometer for where the club's at. Picking up the Stevie Robinson thing, look, I mean, I was never a fan of Alicari, and I would have been pretty concerned if we'd appointed him. My concern about Robinson is I've yet to see anything from him. I was worried when we appointed, because this line was trotted out about consistency. And I don't know, did any of you guys see the interview with Mark McGee on the BBC? I don't know if he's spoken about this before in the podcast, but where McGee kind of expressed his surprise that Robinson, he gave an underhand comment about it. He kind of said something like, I'm trying to remember, it was like, you know, surprised the club had given him the job. You know, if they were unhappy with the regime sort of thing, then why would they give a coach the job? No saying that Rob was a bad coach, etc., etc. I was just worried that the consistency thing was a consistency of pretty poor performances. And if I'm honest, I think that has continued. So, look, I'm giving him the benefit of the doubt. I'm hoping he'll bring in some interesting players. I would love him to be a success, but I'm worried. I suppose I'm the optimist, but I'm pretty worried.
That's fair. I'm sorry, I was just going to say, that's a fair comment. What I would say about it, though, is the fact that, you know, Mark McGee's an arsehole, and if he told me the sky was blue, I would need to double check. So what Mark McGee's got to say about it, I couldn't really care less. The final points on the actual attendances, I mean, at the end of the day, if we were doing this in a year's time and we'd finished top six with Hearts, Hibs, Rangers, Celtic and Aberdeen in there, our attendances would be fantastic compared to what they are now. Unfortunately, it's quite a difficult thing to even judge. As I said earlier, there's so many factors to it now. It isn't just, you know, the home fans turning up. But, you know, at the end of the day, I've spoken before, at the end of the day, I just don't see any great worry. You know, if we were to get relegated this season, you cut your cloth accordingly, you carry on. I don't, you know, there seems to be this kind of panic and kind of, you know, real sort of ill feeling and negativity about relegation, which of course would be a horrible, horrible thing to go through, and we might not come back up. But see, to be honest, see playing Kilmarnock four times a season and doing absolutely fuck all other than that, we don't win any silverware, we do nothing. And see, to be honest, if we get relegated and spend the next 5 years in the Championship and our attendances go down a little bit, so be it. It will still be the exact same experience as supporting Motherwell. I'm certainly not advocating that we should get relegated, but I just don't see the worry there. If people aren't coming through the gates, it's because we're not playing well. If we start to put a team together that plays well, more people will come through the gates. It's a cycle, and it's not something I'm too concerned about.
I just, again, like yourself, so I'm not really that bothered about attendances. I don't really keep my eye on them. I go with what I see at the football. And to be fair, even when we were finishing second in the league, I didn't see that much of a difference. You know, there's maybe another couple of hundred people there, but there was no massive difference. And on Stevie Robinson, as he quite rightly said, you know, it wasn't going to be pretty. His job was to keep us up. I complained about it a few times about his unwillingness to change for the back three, like you said as well, Jay. That was a bit of a bugbear of mine as well. But again, he's done what he said he had to do, keep us up. He's got a clean slate now. He's going to have to basically rebuild, so it will be his team come July or August, and if it's still the same shite that we'd seen over the last 10 weeks or whatever it is, 10, 12, 14 weeks, whatever it's been, then we can start to get a wee bit of money about it. But he's got a clean slate.
Hopefully he's going to put on a bit more of a show, a bit more entertainment. And as I say, as long as they're... Actually, I don't even really care about the show. See if we win every game 1-0 at a shite fest. That'll do me, actually. But we know that's not going to happen, so we'd like to see a wee bit of nice fat bit at times. But as I say, he's got a clean slate, so onwards and upwards.
Yeah, I'm pretty much in the unconvinced camp as well. I just due to some of the post-match stuff and just generally, I think we've maybe kidded ourselves because we got these wins to get us out of bother. But as Buster says, clean slate now. There's no doubt that he's going to be at the club at the start of next season. So it's really a case of we're as well getting behind him.
See, to be fair as well, as you say, your post-match stuff and things, just to pick up on it again, I said it to you in a text message or something, maybe whatever it was, I says, I'm moaning about Bowman's goal or Bowman's celebration or whatever. That was just to deflect for the fact that we were utterly shite and got beat off an even shiter Inverness team. And I do believe that, honestly, Dave. And as I say, it was the last game of the season. It was basically, it meant nothing. We didn't go up or down in positions due to Hamilton, Scud and Dundee as well. So, you know, I let it slide, but I think that was just a complete deflection.
See, so just on that point, we kind of mentioned it earlier on and I never came in. So I watched, you mentioned it earlier on, I watched the goal go in, and the way that Robinson, so I heard Robinson's comments and then I watched it, and I had some idea in my head after I listened to Robinson that Bowman's put the ball in the net and he's done an Alan Shearer-esque run to the crowd, one hand up, you know, totally giving it loudy. And what I saw was pretty tame. And then I started to think, okay, it's a deflection, just like you're saying. And then I thought, why is he trying to pick on a player to deflect like that? I thought it was a really strange thing. I just didn't get it.
Yeah.
It struck me as an odd thing to do. If he had something to say about that, then that should have been done in the dressing room. The whole way that was handled just seemed really strange.
Yeah, I think...
Seemed quite unfair, I think. I suppose is what I'm trying to say.
If it was a Mark McGee comment, for instance, I think it would have been talked about a lot more and it would have been hanging the player out to dry, which I think he essentially has done, but it's not really been picked up on because of the significance of the game. But a lot about it was very strange. Bowman and McFadden looked very, very pissed off that he wasn't getting to take that penalty, and Bowman wrestled the ball off him and put it away. But if he had missed it, it would have been a different story. But he scored the penalty. He responded to the fact that there was a lot of the crowd had moved down behind the goal as well. So if he had just turned his back and ran to the halfway line, we still would have just had Inverness kicking off and the game finishing. So seemed an odd one. But again, it's clean slate time, given that there isn't going to be any change there. Whether you believe he should have had a contract to the end of the season or the length of contract he was given. At the time, I did believe that we needed stability. We've got that, so we wait and see what happens. We've made some plans for summer podcasts. Lots of great replies and suggestions. So far, Stephen McGarry and Tam Cowan are both lined up for podcasts. Hopefully get a few more over the summer months. Jay Buster, thank you very much for your time over the course of this season. It's been a good laugh as always. A bit negative at times, I suppose, but that's kind of what we're there for, I suppose. But yeah, a lot of good times in the podcast and the various things over the course of the season. So thanks very much.
No worries. Cheers.
None at all. Thanks very much.
Neil, thank you very much for your time tonight, mate. Hopefully we can have you on very soon in the near future. Really enjoyed having you.
No worries at all. One favour to ask then, if you're going to be looking for names, try and get Luke Nyholt. Easily the greatest player ever to pull on a Motherwell jersey, bar none. A phenomenal player. If we could get Luke Nyholt on, I would be absolutely delighted.
I've got an issue here.
Go on.
Luke Nyholt was great, and if we hadn't been going for an hour and 25 minutes so far,
I'll spend the next half hour arguing about who is the greatest ever Malone.
he certainly walks into right back in terms of the best 11 I've seen, but I'm not sure if Grant
is.
David Cooper would always be my number one.
No danger. A conversation for our time, but Luke Nihil, easily. This is a boy that broke his leg in the March, still made the Scottish Cup final in the May. Go figure that. What a player. Anyway, that's just a bit of hero worship there.
He's like the Anthony Lucas, by the sounds of it.
True comment. Anyway.
He must have borrowed Lee Lucas's legs and they never gave them back. Yes, thanks very much, guys. It's been a disappointing season, but as I say, we've had a lot of good podcasts, a lot of good guests, and thanks again, Neil, for adding to that list.
No worries at all, guys. Good to speak to you all.
You've been listening to the MFC podcast. We'll be back across the summer with some summer specials, and then in early July for the start of the 2017-18 season. Until then, thank you, goodbye.